From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 12th day of November 2013. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Stephen Platt of Archer Financial Services will be here to look at the energy markets, and we'll discuss the weather forecast with Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Along the way today, we'll introduce you to the brand new farm policy expert right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus in the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences. His name is Jonathan Kappas, and it all happens during this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
Checking the numbers now as they finished up in Chicago. Settlement prices like this: December contract for the soft red winter wheat down a penny at 645 and a quarter. The March at 655 and three quarters, a penny and a half lower. July at 661 and a half. The new crop finished 3¼ cents lower for the soft red. The hard red new crop July at $6.98, down 5 cents. December corn 432 and a quarter, down 2½ cents. The March at 444, 2½ lower. And the May corn $4.53, 2½ cents lower. July contract at 459 and three quarters, down 2. And next year's December corn at 472 and a half, down 3¼. November beans $13.19¼, up 11¼. January at 13.14½, 13½ higher. The March contract $12.96½, up 14¾. And May soybeans 12.77, up 14½ cents. July futures 12.71½, up 13¾. Next year's November beans at $11.76, and they finished 9 higher. Bean meal at 427.70, up 5.60. Bean oil at $40.75. That's up 33 for the afternoon. Live cattle futures finished the December at 132.67½, down 7½ cents. February at 134.27½, down a dime. November feeder cattle at 164.65, a settlement up 45 cents. January at 164.20, up 2½. And the lean hogs finished the December contract for the day at $87.20, down 85 cents. February lean hogs at $91.35, 87½ cents lower on the afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It does come to you from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. You can always find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures, December contract, $93.18 a barrel, $1.95 lower. Wholesale price of gasoline, or the RBOB, at $2.58 and 7 cents, that's 0.8 cents lower. Ethanol futures at $1.74 and 3 cents, 3¾ cents gallon higher. And the difference between the two is now 84¼ cents wide, or 4½ cents narrower than yesterday. Natural gas in the December contract at $3.62 and 2 cents, up 4¼ cents, and diesel fuel at $2.85 and 9 cents, 3¼ cents lower. That's the New York Harbor ultra low sulfur diesel. Gold futures at $1,271 and $20. That's $9.20. That is down $9.90 in the U.S. dollar at $81.18. That's up 0.09 on the day. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. We should see sunny skies this afternoon. It'll be cool. In fact, a high of just 33 degrees. We're 32 degrees outside right now. Sunny skies tomorrow as well with a high of 40 degrees. Tonight's low, by the way, will be cold at 17 degrees on a northwest wind at 5 to 7. But those winds will turn to the south-southwest by the time we get through tomorrow. And then that 40-degree high tomorrow afternoon will give way to a mostly clear night and a low of 26. Sunny skies on Thursday and 49, and Thursday evening partly cloudy and a low of 35 degrees. Friday, sunny skies, 48. Friday night, cloudy and 34. Saturday, sunny and 53. Saturday evening, a chance of rain, mostly cloudy, and a low of 44. A more complete look at the weather forecast comes up at the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, right here on Illinois Public Media. Music.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension. Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
It is the 12th day of November 2013. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. On the phone line is Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana, to take a look at the futures trade for a Tuesday afternoon. Good afternoon to you, Wayne.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
Well, things were kind of exciting for a while in the soybean pit. A little bit of a gain today.
Yeah, you know, we broke through the 50-day moving average. We went up and went through the October highs, and we saw a little professional buying come in, and the funds were buyers of a few thousand contracts of beans, and took us very close to what, you know, could possibly be a little bit of a breakout type on the beans. Now, we did settle back a little bit on the close, but not drastically, and you know, we had very, very good export shipments last week, but they expected them to be there, so that along the way with everything going along and the bean markets continuing to stay tight in the cash market and the basis being extremely good, why, you know, maybe we can see just a little rebound in the beans.
We could see a rebound in the beans. On the other hand, it could be just technical trading for the day and flipped a few switches and shoved it higher?
Well, I mean, it definitely was the technical end of things that pushed it higher. I mean, as we're looking here, you know, the farmers have been having very good yields in the beans. They're coming in. You know, we know we've got somewhat of a tight situation, but we're very, very heavy front-loaded. And, boy, do we have some competition coming out of South America as we get into the March time frame. And their planning is going along extremely well as we look at that now, too. So that, and I mean, there was one Chinese sale announcement this morning. So, I mean, they continue to stay somewhat firm, but we're a little bit leery that they're just going to take off and run.
Any advice on the 2014 soybean crop?
Well, in the 2014 crop, you know, we're looking at 11.76 or so here today. We'd like to get them a little bit closer to $12. If you haven't got anything really moved, why, somewhere between the 11.75 and $12 might be a place to start looking at something or even going out there and selling, say, a $13 or $14 call against something as to give you a little courage to sell something or, you know, to buy a put later with, have the money to do that. So
we'll need some follow-through probably on the front end in order to make that push on the back end. Can we pick up 25 to 30 cents yet?
You know, it's a long time till we get into that 14 crop, and we got a lot of things to go through. So, you know, there's always that possibility, but do we look for it to get up there the next day or two? No.
All right, and then on the front end side of that, the November beans and January contract, which is at 13, 14 and a half out of its settlement price today, and that's where most of the cash bids are coming from. Is there a reason for producers to take advantage of this price?
You know, this has been a nice little pop-up. We thought that we were going to get somewhere. We'd be lucky to get to the 13, 20 to 30 mark. You know, we got up there. We closed 13, 19. We got it to 25 in the November. So, you know, just a little bit more of a pop-up. Why we'd probably be... if you haven't sold many beans or got a lot to sell yet, we'd probably be thinking about scaling into this.
Your thought process on the December corn contract?
The December corn contract, you know, I think that basically we're sort of stuck in this trading range right around the 425 to 440, and it looks like that 39 area seems to be really strong resistance as far as the December 13 corn goes, Todd. So a lot of corn, a lot of corn, a lot of piles. It's going to be hard to push on up on that one. You know, in fact, today we had Goldman Sachs lowered its price forecast for corn down to $4 from 4.25, and their 12-month forecast at 3.75. So we've got some big people out there not projecting an increase in corn prices.
And they did that for any particular reason, did they say, or they just lowered it down because of the size of the crop this year, because of the size of the next crop potentially next year?
I think a little bit of both, but I didn't get to read any reasoning on it. So.
All right. Hey, thanks so much for taking the time with us.
Thanks, Todd.
That's Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities. He's in New Market, Indiana, and joins us here on this Tuesday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report. You can always find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. For over 96 years, generations of farmers have turned to Farm Credit for their financial needs. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit offers products and service geared specifically to the agricultural community.
Don't forget you can find us online at willag.org, or if not online, try this number, 217-333-3434. We call that one our mobile analyst portal. It's just voicemail, but it's updated at about 10:15 and 3:15 each and every business day. Tomorrow, the agricultural economist from the University of Illinois will host the Farmland Markets Conference at the Hilton Garden Inn right here in Champaign, Illinois. You can go if you'd like. Walk-ins are still welcome. The cost is $99. It opens at 8 a.m. in the morning. Joe Glauber will be there. He's the chief economist from the United States Department of Agriculture. And we'll introduce a brand new member of the faculty here on the Urbana-Champaign campus to look at farm policy. His name is Jonathan Kappas. He helped over the last 3 years craft the Senate version of the Farm Bill. I asked him about the sausage making, relatively speaking, of the Farm Bill, and why it is that the food and nutrition program seems to be the hang-up in that conversation.
Well, I disagree a little bit. There is certainly what's been reported, and the biggest gulf, the biggest gap, is on the nutrition side. The Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, SNAP, used to be called food stamps. The House and the Senate are in very different places. You know, it's one of those where it's hard to find or think about a middle ground, which makes the negotiation a little bit different. Somebody's going to have to, is probably going to have to give on a position that's been pretty hard fought for. Title I, which is the commodity programs, the subsidy assistance, farm assistance programs, there's a lot of similarities, but there's some really big differences, and those are going to be difficult, I think, to sort out as well, because you have some very different, I'd almost say philosophical different views and differences in those views that don't necessarily lend themselves to easy compromise. But the name of the game in a conference committee is to come up with a compromise and find a way to sort of bring the pieces together and I think there's a way. I think there are ways to do it. I have some confidence, although it's been a difficult process that's tested optimism at many steps along the way. I think they can find that. They can find a couple of those points.
Although I have to say, the difference between the House and the Senate versions of this bill, $40 million on the nutrition side and cuts from the House, and $4 million on the Senate side, that's a big gulf.
It's a huge gulf. I mean, the numbers are definitely far apart. Where the real issues are the policy, and it's just some fundamental differences in the way this program is viewed and the way the savings are achieved. The easiest way to think of it is the Senate looks at what we considered was not quite a loophole, but an issue in the way the benefit calculations were being calculated in some of the states. But nobody is kicked off the program or prevented from getting into the program. And that's whereas the House changed some of the eligibility pieces, and that's where you run into a lot of political issues. Now you're telling people that otherwise were getting benefits, they no longer can, or those that would have been eligible no longer are eligible for the program. And that creates an entirely different political aspect to it. So the money's big, but it's the way you get to those savings has a much bigger impact on the ground and in people's districts. And that then, you know, you back that into the policy and the politics of it. Now you've created a situation that really hits home and really causes some problems for members of Congress and senators and, frankly, the administration.
But it's Colin Peterson on the House side that has a problem with the nutrition programs, isn't it? And he's a Democrat.
Well, he's, you know, and a lot of this is, there's the old adage, all politics are local. And so certainly different districts, different states, different regions have very, you know, the program impacts are different people and really, you know, you see a lot more recipients in the urban areas, for example. Although you got, you know, there are many rural communities, particularly with the way this recent economic downturn has hit and hit home in some places. You've got a lot of people that rely on this. You know, I think the tough thing in this conversation is that this isn't abstract. I mean, this is, you're putting food on the table. And the individuals, you know, this is where you get into a big issue with this, because people are using this to buy food. You have a lot of the individuals that are using, that are getting the benefit, the program, are older, or they're families with young children. And at the end of the day, this is a program that helps them feed their family. And when you start taking that away or telling people they can't get it, I mean, that's not an abstract matter for somebody who's struggling to feed the family. And so, you know, from what I have learned, what I saw, you want to be careful on how that policy comes out, because it you're making a difference in somebody's life on the ground. And so I think there's a way to get there. I think, in my opinion, and I wouldn't pretend to be objective, considering that I worked on this for quite a bit, I don't see how the provisions from the House or that level of savings can ever get through. It's not going to pass the Senate, and won't be signed by the President. In which case, if we want a farm bill, then there are decisions to be made. You know, where's the priority? Is the priority getting a bill, getting the entire package, and having the farm safety net, the conservation, the research, the energy dollars, as well as this food assistance? And you know, it's been since 1973 that the farm assistance side and the food assistance side got brought together. And there's a reason that's worked for 40 years, getting farm bills through. And so again, from my perspective, it seems like that's the only way you're going to get it. That's the only way you're going to get all sides of a bill with that much in it is to keep it together, find a way to not cause as much problem through the SNAP program and get the acceptance. So it's quite an undertaking right now.
United we stand and divided we fall, but it's really about the clout that both of those constituencies have in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, I think a couple of numbers that always jumped out at me in this discussion were more than 75% of the districts in the House are not rural, are not agriculture focused. And at the end of the day, you're counting votes, and it's what brings the votes to pass the bill and get it across the finish line. And I think the other number that always sort of struck me is you're talking about upwards of 45, 47 million Americans. There's not that many farmers. And, you know, building these coalitions and finding a way to bring together multiple interests and sides into a compromise and into a coalition that will get the entire bill across the finish line, that's the way it gets done. And having lived through it twice on the Senate floor with the chairwoman, that's how you get the broad bipartisan vote that gets a bill to the president and into law, and building that coalition and keeping that coalition together, because there's plenty in there for somebody to attack and from all sides, all ends of the political spectrum. And you're going to deal with that. But being able to have the coalition and a strong coalition around it keeps those attacks there. It's either something that you can win on a vote, or it makes people think about how they address the bill or go after the bill because you have support. The most troubling thing is watching it become partisan and watching some of what we've seen happen, which draws more animosity to the bill and makes it harder. Harder to complete, frankly.
That's Jonathan Kappas, Ag Policy Specialist from the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences. You can see him in person tomorrow at the Farmland Markets Conference. It's at the Hilton Garden Inn. That starts at 8 a.m., runs throughout the day. Joe Glauber will be there, along with Scott Irwin and Gary Schnitke, many others. If you're interested, just $99 at the door. That includes the meal and all the materials. That's the Farmland Markets Conference. You can find all the details on our site at willag.org or on the Farm Doc Daily website. You're listening, of course, to Illinois Public Media.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
Well, a couple of notes about the debate in Washington, D.C. on the Farm Bill, and particularly about this interview with Jonathan Coppes. I believe I said 40 million and 4 million, and actually it's much larger than that. It's 40 billion and 4 billion. And then this debate, it appears, and I think this is what you probably may take away from the conversation with Mr. Coppes, to be about the size of government and how many people are served by the food and nutrition programs. It's simply a philosophical difference between not the Republican and the Democrats in this case, but the Senate and the House. It certainly will be an interesting situation to watch as it continues to develop. Now, let's check now. The agricultural energy markets on the phone line with us is Stephen Platt. He's at Archer Financial Services in Chicago, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Stephen. I almost moved you to Washington, D.C.
Well, I've been there.
Me too. Not for long, but I've been there. Hey, so tell me about the agricultural energy markets and what's leading the way at this time.
Well, we've certainly seen a lot of pressure on the crude market. We've talked about some of the bearishness that has been developing in these markets for the past few months, and certainly it's coming to rest in terms of the market being down here now near $93. That's off over from over 103 the last time we talked. The other markets have, in terms of the spreads, have also kind of indicated the weakness in these markets. We've seen the Brent gain on WTI as supplies out of Cushing built. In addition, we've seen the cracks in terms of the products gaining on crude developing here over the past month, with the gas crack moving out from $9.80 per barrel to $15, and the distillate crack also seeing some gains as well. So the markets have pretty much been under pressure to the benefit of users, and I think that probably is going to be the case. We talked about the possibility that these markets needed to go down to try to shut in some production. I don't think that's happened yet, but I think over the longer term that might be the case, and probably need to see maybe the mid-80 area to be tested at some point, and probably values to hold down near those levels in order to get the response there on the production side and maybe shut in some alternatives. Certainly, we're seeing some of the ethanol talk and the mandate being a big problem for the market, too, weighing on values as well.
Yeah, and just very quickly, would you suppose, given your assessment, that producers needing to book diesel fuel need to wait it out just a bit? Because usually this time of year when things bottom.
Well, I think at least for now, yes, I would. But probably the products are going to hold up better than the crude. I would prefer being, long the product, certainly, if I had to be long anything. But it may well be that the volatility...
And that is Stephen Platt of Archer Financial Services. Back in 2 minutes. Hey, if you get the opportunity, visit our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find all kinds of information on upcoming meetings for the winter season, including tomorrow's Farmland Market Conference. You'll find the Ag Masters Conference. That's December 2nd and 3rd, sponsored, of course, by the crop scientist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus. And you'll find also the Farm Doc, Illinois Farm Economic Summits. That starts the 16th of December. December runs for the full week. Then there are a couple of our Will Ag Outlook panels. You'll find ways to contact either Dave or myself if you want to have one of those panels. That all in just the months of November and December. And in January, the Crop Sciences Corn and Soybean Classic Series comes up. Our All Day Agricultural Outlook meeting is in the month of March, and it is scheduled for the first Tuesday. That is the fourth day of March. It's all there. That part is not, but it's all there for the most part on our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. Log on right now and find out when and where we'll be.
Support comes from Global Commodity Analytics, now taking reservations for upcoming seminars in Illinois and Indiana. December 2nd in Lafayette, Indiana and Monticello, Illinois, and December 3rd in Jacksonville. Meals provided, reservations required, seating is limited. Contact Mike Zuzulo at 866-471-2588.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on a Tuesday afternoon. Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, is out of the office this afternoon. No worries. We have a report from Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City.
Cold weather has settled into the heart of the Midwest today and probably into tomorrow morning, then a quick recovery in temperatures back to normal. In fact, even warmer than normal conditions will occur as we move forward through. We'll expect the afternoon temperatures tomorrow to rebound back into a little bit more of a favorable range of upper 30s and 40s across a big part of the Midwest. Some lower 50s may occur west of the Missouri River, but that'll occur only after another cold night occurs tonight. We'll expect lows tomorrow morning to run mostly in the teens and 20s across the heart of the Midwest, and it wouldn't surprise me at all to see a couple of upper single-digit readings in a few locations. The temperatures, though, will not be this cold again for quite a little while. We'll expect the low temperatures to rebound back into the 20s and 30s as we move on into the end of the work week. And over the weekend, we may actually see some low temperatures in the 40s across the lower and eastern parts of the Midwest ahead of our next storm system. The afternoon temperatures will also recover somewhat as we move towards the end of this week, with afternoon readings eventually getting back to the 50s and 60s in the lower and eastern portions of the Midwest. And again, the warmest weather will probably occur over the weekend, and we'll likely see that mostly in those eastern and southern parts of the region. I don't think the Northwest will ever get into that kind of warmth. The temperatures up there will most likely be 30s and 40s most often through a big part of the next 5 to 7 days. Well, I did mention the chance for precipitation to return to the Midwest, and I think that that will occur in a couple of little waves. The first little disturbance is probably not going to start impacting the region until we get into probably sometime Friday. The precipitation that occurs initially will be very erratically distributed. Now, there will be a little bit of shower activity already occurring on Thursday afternoon in the western Corn Belt, maybe a few areas from Kansas and Nebraska northward into Minnesota and Wisconsin. Much of this precipitation is not likely to be very well organized, and it's not going to be very impressive on the moisture totals. But as we move into the day on Friday, the precipitation will become perhaps a little bit better organized as it drifts through the eastern Midwest. But it's not until we get involved with another frontal system and another little surge of moisture coming northward from the Gulf of Mexico over the heart of the weekend that we'll see precipitation increase more significantly. The greatest precipitation will probably occur from late Saturday into Monday. During that period of time, a big part of the Midwest will see precipitation at one time or another, and moisture totals could easily run a quarter to three quarters of an inch, with some local amounts getting upwards over an inch. We'll keep an eye on that system. The eastern Midwest will once again be more favored than the western areas, and in particular the Northwest.
Our thanks to Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated for his update of the agricultural weather. A couple of reminders before we go today. The Farmland Markets Conference is scheduled tomorrow. That's at the Hilton Garden Inn right here in Champaign County, in Champaign, Illinois, in fact. Starts at 8 a.m. Walk-ins are welcome. You can find all the information on the Farm Doc Daily website if you'd like, or on our website, too. That's at willag.org. If you're at Will Ag, just look over on the right-hand side of the page for the Outlook Meetings calendar. The Farmland Markets Conference is just $99. Other things that are happening this week: on Thursday in Mount Vernon, the Illinois Beef Association's Beef Quality Assurance Program. That's at 6 in the evening. There's one next week in Lincoln and then in Fairbury. You can find all the information on those on the Illinois Beef Association's website. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.